Open the brackets. Then there's a square root sign. Ah, you weren't expecting that, were you? It's time for all squared. I don't like doing that intro bit, and I'm on my own, so I can make it up. It's just me, Christian Perfect, this time round. Katie Steckles is in Ireland producing new mathematicians. She does this by talking in shopping centres. I don't know whether her voice has particular mathematician-producing powers, or if she's remarkably unsuccessful at that. Anyway, I get to do what I like this time, so I sat down for about an hour with my good friend David Cushing, and we talked about nonsense, really. We tried to keep it mathematical, but we started out with some physics. Because I'm completely stupid, we recorded in a room with a very loud fan and not a good microphone, so the audio is abysmal, and we lost quite a lot of it. It's coming up now. Be warned that it's extremely loud compared to this, so turn your volume down. Here it is in 3, 2, 1.
I'll be good.
Will you?
Yes.
Okay. Right. Should we talk about some maths then?
Yes, we should.
Okay, good. I think we're ready to go.
We are.
Do you want to go first or shall I?
Should we not introduce ourselves?
No, I don't think that's very appropriate.
We should. I do have one question.
What's your question?
Which integer sequence are we reviewing today?
I don't know. I think we reviewed them all. We did pick the integers, so any other ones would have to be at best the second integers.
What are we talking about today?
Well, I've got a couple of things. Have you, David? You've got no notes with you. Is it all in your head?
5 times 16,019 is equal to boobs.
That's incredible. You've factorized boobs.
Yes. I do have another thing, though.
Okay, what's that?
It's a book.
I think it's not a metallic book. I think the audio might have picked up whatever that bit of metal is. But okay. Oh, crumbs. Right, what book is it?
It is Munkus's book on topology. And I'd like to talk about a theorem from that book.
Okay. I had this book, well, I had a copy of this on my computer. Whatever 40-year course it was that you need it for. So what's this theorem?
It says that if you take the closed disk and any continuous function from that disk to itself, at least one point will be fixed.
Okay.
So try and put that in other words. If I take two sheets of paper.
Yeah.
Crumple one up.
Good audio. That's probably too good audio.
Put it on top of the original sheet.
Yeah.
There will be at least one point of the scrumpled up paper which is precisely over the point of the flat sheet.
That's pretty good. I like that. Because topologically the bit of paper is a disk.
Yes. Yeah, so the paper's a disk, the continuous map is scrumpling that up and placing it back.
Cool.
Also, if we had a map of Newcastle,
right,
and put it in this room,
yeah,
we'd be able to, there'd be one exact you are here point. We could put a pin that was hitting the pin on that map.
That's pretty good.
It has lots of other interesting applications, but they're like maths. Like it proves the existence of real eigenvalues for 3x3 matrices, but that doesn't sound very interesting.
Sounds a little bit interesting.
Would that not always also, it has another application called the pancake theorem.
Oh, excellent. You know, so I like pancakes.
If you take a pancake,
yeah,
take the topping of your choice, let's just say syrup.
Okay, it's not my choice.
Spudge some syrup on it.
Yeah.
Take a knife, then there will be at least one point where you can cut the pancake in half and have equal amount of syrup on each half of pancake.
That's a different theorem, surely. Isn't that called, like, the sandwich
something? No, that's a pancake theorem, but okay. You prove it with Brouwer's fixed point theorem.
Okay.
It's a consequence. In the ham sandwich, is you take two pieces of bread, a piece of ham and a piece of cheese,
yeah,
and there exists somewhere to cut it in half so you get equal amounts.
Of bread, cheese and ham?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I think that works similar to the bisection theorem, which might, I'm pretty sure now I'm saying it, it's just the pancake theorem. But if you take two convex polygons in the plane,
yeah,
you can draw a line in the plane that will cut both of them exactly in half.
That sounds like a less general case of the pancake theorem.
Yeah.
Is it easier to prove?
I don't know, I just know it uses Brouwer's fixed point.
Okay.
You fix a circle around the origin, send loads of planes out, and you look at some equation which is area minus something. There's a fixed point. When those fixed points happen, the area is equal to each other. Something like that. I can't remember.
Okay.
That's why I brought the book.
That's good news, David. I'm glad that all of those facts are true. Well, yes. I'd be glad if they were all true. Yes. Are we going to check?
There's another funny theorem from this topology book that hasn't, I don't think it's to do with Bauer's fixed point theorem, but it is called the hairy ball theorem.
Oh, I'm a fan of the hairy ball theorem.
So you can't comb a ball.
Yeah, that's my favourite theorem to break out when people say, what is real maths? When I say, oh, I'm a real mathematician, I don't do sums, I do hairy balls.
If everyone who's listening goes gets a hairy ball and a comb,
okay,
comb it flat, there'll be one crown, follicle, empty bit, that bit at the top of your head, there'll always be one of them.
A wisp? A cowlick? Okay.
There'll always be one of them.
So the statement is that a vector field on a sphere has to have a singularity.
Yeah. So that means, if you take the Earth as the sphere, it means there's always a tornado kicking about.
I tried to tell my dad this once, because we were sitting in his garden, and he pointed out a cloud that was quite far away and said, oh, that's a classic thunder cloud, because it was anvil-shaped. And I said, but there'll be somewhere where the wind is perfectly still. Yeah. He didn't believe me. Then I tried to say, but it could be going up straight up and not sideways. And that just confused matters even more.
You can comb some surfaces. You can comb a torus.
Okay, I can see how you do that.
Yes.
Straight round, yeah.
So because you can comb a torus, and because people think the universe is torus-shaped, we don't have to worry about space tornadoes.
That is an excellent fact.
It doesn't disprove the existence, I don't think. I don't know what a space tornado is. It just means that there might not be any space tornadoes.
Excellent.
Unless you count a black hole as a space tornado.
Oh, that's a good point. I think they might be space tornadoes. Well, they're space-time tornadoes.
Yeah. Spine tornadoes. A spine-nado. That should definitely be the next sequel to Sharknado. A tornado of black holes. Only Stephen Hawking can save the day.
I think the scene...
Firing Stephen Hawking into a tornado of sharks and black holes. Here's another interesting thing I thought. So, it's impossible... By black holes, it's impossible to know how many elephants are in a black hole.
Wait, why?
Because once they're in, you can't look to see what a black hole's eating.
But that's the whole thing about Hawking radiation. You can get information out of a black hole.
But you can't count how many elephants are in. No, isn't Hawking radiation isn't that to do with a thing flipping into existence and dodging off or something?
I don't know. I thought the question was whether you can get anyway, this is physics. Anyway, so we're not qualified to talk about this.
Somebody complained we didn't talk about applied maths and had to butcher it so they don't complain again.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, so basically, if you were sat looking at your black hole when it's just formed, you could just count the number of elephants that came in.
Right.
But I was thinking, I could get around this by taking my own black hole, filling it up with an unknown amount of elephants, and then could I fit my black hole inside your black hole so that you wouldn't know how many elephants you had in yours? But I don't know if black holes eat each other.
They do eat each other, I think.
Do black holes move?
So could you have like a clown black hole, where you fit an improbable number of clowns into a black hole?
You could.
You'd have to be like Aleph 1 clowns or something for it to be improbable.
Yeah, I'm definitely putting a countable number of elephants in my black hole. Okay. So I don't know if I can fit... Yeah, how many elephants can you fit in a black hole?
That's a very good question. I think there's an upper limit on the size of the universe. Or maybe there isn't.
Yeah, but doesn't it condense everything down to something really small?
Yeah, but I mean, there's only so much you can feed in before there's nothing left. Oh, this is physics. I don't understand any of this. Can we talk about my thing?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
Does it include elephants?
I don't know.
Why have you come prepared?
Well, I've come prepared because that's the kind of guy I am. So you like problems, don't you?
Yes.
There's a book called Only Problems, Not Solutions. Right. How does that take you? Okay. For the record, David did the unsure hand movement.
Am I going to have to solve a problem live?
I don't think so. Oh, yes. I can't scroll this. There we go. It's this book.
I just saw the word juggler. Does this have clones?
It might do. It's by Florentin Smarandash. It's got a picture of some kind of... I've no idea what that is at the top. Maybe that's another problem.
It's lots of histograms.
Yeah. It's like a 3D plot or something.
Weird.
And it's written on a typewriter or some kind of linotype machine.
This is what all those Russians do.
And it seems to be just a big book of unsolved problems.
What is the maximum unsolved problem?
Yeah, number 13.
What is the maximum number of circles of radius 1 at most tangential by 2s, which are included into a circle of radius n? Glutton of a problem, I don't know.
Well, apparently the answer to this is gamma of 1 over 1986. Well, no, you're not at the end of the... Look, we're reading this. You're not at the end of the paragraph.
All right. I'm not reading it all. Shorter problem.
Okay, we're not interested.
I don't do circles.
Well, I think he changes the radius to radius of... Is that going to be a theta there? Yeah. Right. That's not short. Oh, we've got... Look, a sequence. Are you interested in the sequence?
Not really.
Not really? That's a change of heart.
One, two. Oh, I spent about an hour trying to solve this.
Okay, well, it's unsolved problem number 15.
Right, so consider the sequence 1, 12, 123, 1,234. So this is just the concatenations of the natural numbers. Yeah. When you get to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you're 10. Then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And the question is, how many primes are there amongst these numbers? Now, I spent a very long time on Wolfram Alpha. I got past the hundreds, and I couldn't find a single prime. So I'm not entirely sure if primes do exist here. I tried Googling it, but couldn't find anything. Interestingly, if you just cycle 1, 2, 3, all the digits, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, just take subsequences of that, you can get an infinite number of primes, I believe. It's in the OIS anyway.
Okay. That's a cool fact.
And it also has all the different subsequences. We might have actually reviewed one of these. Because you can start with 2, or 3, or 4, or 5, but I don't think they had any starting with 6. There was something weird. One of the numbers that didn't have any use starting with it.
Yeah.
And we didn't know why. We thought, is this number always instantly composite? But we couldn't think of why it was. It was just missing from the OIS.
Okay, there are quite a few more problems in this vein. There's one where you do 1, 2, 3, and then look at 3, 2, 1, and look at how many primes there are in there. This symmetric one is, you make up
so it's the one we just talked, but reverse it and shove it on the end.
Yeah. 1, 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 1, 2, 2, 1, etc. Right, let's skip farther down this book. It's all unsolved problems.
We can't put a visual one on. Is this balance? Was that balance? Sorry. Ooh, pie.
Ooh, pie. where did you see banner?
Is this... No, it just felt like a Banach space. I didn't see the word.
I don't know.
There was lots of E's and an L.
Okay. This is... Whoa, that's a nice diagram.
There's a zeta. Ooh.
Zetas. Ooh.
There's a graph. Us ooing at pictures and symbols is a very good
thing. Well, you can watch
radio.
Along at home. Okay, I think we'll end on this book once I've...
Can we find another problem?
I just saw a very nice set of
what
numbers.
Is
that's
that?
Beautiful. Okay, we need to look up here.
It's like a triangle. A
unsolved
pyramid.
Problem 102, the numerical carpet. It looks nice. I've never heard of it before. On the border of level 0, the elements are equal to 1, in quotes, as if, like, some people call it 1. I'm not convinced yet. Okay, next, on the border of level 1, the elements are equal to A, where A is the sum of all elements of the previous border. So it
is this like Pascal, but sort of...
Yeah,
number?
It looks pretty cool.
Apparently it's... Is that how you spell aesthetic?
No,
I thought there was an E in it.
That's how Americans spell it, because they decided not to learn how to spell. Okay. Oh, that's pretty cool. And what's the question? Oh, study this multi-sequence. It doesn't even ask a question. It's just sort of, hey, this is nice. Yeah. Sounds like a cool guy.
Is it not like a short, snappy question?
I don't know.
One way we go, yeah, of course.
I reckon either the last one or the first one is going to be very short.
Look at the last one. Can we even look at the first one?
No, we didn't. I'll go back up to it.
Can we look at the 40-second problem?
Okay. For the record, the last one is really, really long. Right, where's number 4? Oh, there, 42. Oh, that was pretty lucky.
The factorial part.
It's the inferior factorial part.
And the superior. Study these things. That's not a question.
Well, maybe it is. It's like 1-1.
Should we look at the first question? Just see how he sets the tone.
Okay. I think there's a bit of intro as well if you want to read that.
No, we don't want intro. Okay. Intros are for wusses. Real men solve things. And women.
What about imaginary people? Are they not allowed to solve things? Like Bobaki. Okay. Unsolved problem
one. Oh, this looks easy. Find all integer sequences.
That's not the problem. There's more to it. for all I in N star. Is N star?
Star?
I think it's
natural numbers
with zero.
Zero.
Yeah, I think so.
That's because zero isn't natural.
Zero is a natural number.
It's not a natural number.
It's more than natural. And you need to give up your old-fashioned ways. It's nice and short. You want all numbers such that AI is equal to AJ mod AK. For
all I not equal to J, not equal to K, not equal to I. I don't know. Do you need the A? You probably do need that.
For all I, there exists a J and a K. Oh, okay. So for every element of the sequence, there's another one somewhere else that is equal to AI modulo AK.
Well, this is two different sequences, isn't it? It's two different questions. The first question is, find all the sequences such that if you take three elements that subscripts are different, I, J, and K, AI will be congruent to AJ mod AK.
It's not even... No, you don't even need to take all triples. You just need to take one I and then find a J somewhere.
So for all that, fine.
Yeah.
For all that exists a J... And the K, so AI is congruent to AJ mod AK.
Okay.
So that means if you give me an element, I can find two other elements such that my first one minus yours is divisible by my second.
Whoa. Okay, that's really hard. And it's unsolved. Because I don't even know how to begin with that.
Well, instantly, okay, any sequence that begins that David, has the number one in it
David,
works.
I've got one that works.
What?
The all sevens.
The all sevens does work. Also, any sequence with the number one.
Yep.
If you pick AI not equal to one, then I give you back my AK, then we'll be doing modulo one, and everything's congruent modulo one. If you pick that one, I have to then be able to pick an AJ that is congruent to one mod J K.
Yeah.
So we
gotta pick N and N plus one, basically.
Yeah. So all sequences that have one in it and two consecutive numbers will work. That's probably not the full case, is it? Well, it's not.
No,
it's all seven.
That just deals with the one, but then you've got to deal with the rest of it.
Yeah, but the rest you just do modulo one.
Oh, yeah.
And everything works modulo one.
Yeah, okay. Right, that's fun.
So this
book is ridiculous.
Can we not solve this?
I prefer the other Russian book, and I never thought I'd say this.
What's the other Russian book?
I can't
book?
Remember what it's called. The one that Matt gave us. It's just this
Anvar's book.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. We have a lecture here. I might get this wrong, but I'm pretty sure he said he solved one of these problems a day. And given there's lots of problems in it, I think I worked out he probably finished the book 2 years ago. If he was actually doing this, then he spent like 50 years solving this book.
Yeah, it's a book of... They're not unsolved problems. And
no,
they're the kind of thing that you should be able to attack if you've done undergrad.
Yeah, it's just... Generally, differential equations or trigonometric identities or just expanding some mental polynomial.
Yeah.
But it takes an awful, awful lot of algebraic manipulation.
Yeah.
It could. Yeah, that became an office thing for a few days. We'd write one of these up on the board, play the Eye of the Tiger, and see who could solve it first.
Usually me. Yeah, you're not going to deny maybe. That, are you? Yeah. Okay.
That's only. Hey, I saw one of them, but probably I didn't show any work.
Well, so given the questions, they usually show that.
Yeah,
the working
show
is...
that. We weren't told what we had to show. I just okay. guessed what it looked like. No, sorry. I saw what it looked like and didn't guess. Showed no work at all, then I got to school.
Don't believe you. Okay, so that was a fun book.
Nice.
Have you got anything else to talk about? Or can
I can make something up.
What do you... like what?
I don't know. I've been looking at automatic progressions recently.
Yes, you have. You're always looking at them. You're going to end up like a madman one day, just seeing the news in it.
So what I was thinking about was... but I've also been thinking about powerful numbers, which we reviewed once. No, we didn't. We reviewed Achilles numbers. So a powerful number is a number such that if p divides it, then p squared must also divide it, where p is a prime. So that means that if you write out this number's prime factorization,
yeah,
and look at the powers all these p's are raised to, there'll be no ones there. There'll all be two or bigger.
Okay.
So 6 is not powerful because 2 divides it and 4 doesn't, 3 divides it and 9 doesn't. But 36 is powerful.
Yep, because it's 4 times 9.
Yes. Okay. So these are very nice, lovely numbers, and there's a few nice properties they have. So, for example, if you take the set of all of them, they contain arbitrary long arithmetic progressions. So if you give me an integer k, I can give you k powerful numbers in arithmetic progression, so they all have the same common difference. So if you say 119, I can go find you 119 powerful numbers. And this fact is actually really easy to prove.
Good.
It's proved by induction.
Uh-oh.
So
Wait, is it proved by induction and assuming a big theorem from somewhere?
No. Uh-huh. So 36 is powerful, so there's the base case done. We've got an arithmetic progression of 1.
Okay.
Actually, you need it for 2. There probably is an arithmetic progression of 2, but I can't think of what it is. Can you think of one? Just 2 powerful numbers. So 36 and 72 work.
Isn't 4 a powerful number?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, 4 and 36.
Oh, 4 and 9 are powerful numbers anyway. So 4 and 9 are 2 and arithmetic progressions.
Right.
And then we've got our 4 and our 9.
Yeah.
And we want the next one. Well, why don't we just add 5 again? 4, 9, 14. But 14's not powerful. But if you multiply a powerful number by a powerful number, you get a powerful number. So why don't we multiply through by 14 squared? So 4 times 14 squared is a powerful number. 9 times 14 squared is a powerful number. 14 times 14 squared is 14 cubed, which is a powerful number. And the common difference will be 70. So we now have 3 powerful numbers in alphabet progression. And what we do is we've got our 14 cubed at the end, common difference 70, add 70, times by that squared, and go on and on. And
very
we can
good.
Get arbitrary long
alphabet progressions. I like your mind for arbitrarily long, which is your arms really far apart.
Well, no, they go
yeah.
arbitrarily distance.
Okay.
So there's a nice thing, what I like to do is if you've got a sequence of arbitrary long arithmetic progressions, you take the reciprocals of them all and add them all up.
Okay.
And this turns out to be zeta 2 times zeta 3 over zeta 6 for the powerful numbers.
Wait, what is it? That's the limit of what it is?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is the Riemann zeta function. So this is quite interesting because this is a sequence which contains arbitrary long arithmetic progressions and the sum of its reciprocals diverges.
Oh, hang on. No. You're taking the limit of the arithmetic sequences of
not arithmetic progressions. All powerful numbers.
Oh, sorry.
Take the sum of the reciprocals, add them all up and you get something finite.
That makes more sense.
Because if you do it with the natural numbers, you don't get something finite.
You don't.
If you do it with the primes, you don't. And so I think it's quite interesting that we've got arbitrary long arithmetic progressions and it's finite. That Erdős man said that if I give him a subset of the natural numbers,
yeah.
such that some of the reciprocals diverges, then he was pretty sure it would contain arbitrary long arithmetic progressions. But he couldn't prove this fact. And well, I think he offered like $1,000 for this.
That's a lot for Reddish.
But he also said that it's probably not worth solving because you'll still be on less than minimum wage if you solve this. And what people, I believe, they haven't even proved it, that there'd be an arithmetic progression of length 3. Wow. So he thinks it works for arbitrary long, but no one's even proved you get an arithmetic progression of length 3 from it. He also had another conjecture on powerful number.
Okay.
So there are infinitely many consecutive powerful numbers.
Okay, I can just about believe
that. One reason why you get this is there's an equation called Pell's equation. So it's that x squared minus n times y squared is equal to 1 has infinitely many solutions. As long as n's not a square. So let n be in 8. So therefore, x squared minus 8y squared is equal to 1.
Yeah.
So 8y squared is a powerful number.
Yeah.
Because yes. It's 8 powerful, y squared has to be powerful.
Yeah.
Add 1 to it, you get x squared. So because this Diophantine equation has an infinite number of solutions, there's infinite many pairs. So the next thing, when you've got a pair, you want to get a triple.
Whoa.
So you want three numbers,
yeah.
X plus 1, X plus 2 are powerful, and there probably isn't any.
What?
No one's found any yet. And if the ABC conjecture is true, then there's only finitely many.
Finitely many what?
Powerful triples.
Oh.
So there's probably none, but ABC proves there's only finitely many.
I don't like the ABC conjecture as much anymore.
Why? Because you want powerful triples.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking of
Charlie's Angels. This one.
I was thinking of arithmetic progression. So why look at powerful triples who were just different by one?
How many BGs were there?
Two? Are
there? No, brothers? There were three of them.
I thought they were Gibbs twins.
Yeah, but then there's a brother as well.
Twins and brothers.
That's a triple.
Right.
Okay. Sorry.
Are they really powerful?
Well, I can tell by the way they walk their walk. They're pretty powerful.
What about the original Star Wars?
They're powerful enough to relight my fire. The original Star Wars film.
Is that even a BG song?
Yeah.
It's Take That.
Yeah, they covered a BG song.
They covered Take That. It is an original.
Yeah.
What? Take That have more than 30 people.
Yeah, they're a powerful quadruple. Have I destroyed your train of thought?
Powerful, yeah, so instead of looking at difference 1, why don't you fix some D? Take an arithmetic progression such that the first two terms are co-prime.
No, what? Right, okay.
Yeah, so A and A plus D are co-prime, equivalently A and the common difference are co-prime.
Yeah.
Then, assuming the ABC, if anyone reads my blog thing, assuming the ABC conjecture, you can show that there's only finitely many powerful triples with common difference D. So you're not necessarily looking at one, you can look at any number.
Okay.
But, it's important that D is co-prime to the initial term, otherwise you can get a powerful triple if D's not co-prime, which isn't that fun. And I'm pretty sure you can get infinitely many pairs, but I don't know. And I just thought of back to the powerful numbers, which are consecutive. It's solving that equation, but how you do it is you take the square root of it, yeah. You write it as a continued fraction.
Yeah.
You then stop at some point.
Right.
So you've got a finite fraction. So you simplify that into a fraction. You've got numerator and denominator. You take the denominator and times by 8, you get another number. Look at the numerator, you've got two numbers, and they end up being consecutive powerful numbers.
Is that a coincidence?
No. It's if you take x squared minus 8y squared is equal to 1,
yeah.
You can rearrange it, to get x over y is equal to the square root of 8 plus 1 over y squared. So generally this 1 over y squared is going to be small. So you're getting an approximation of the square root of 8.
Very nice.
And then you take the continued fraction approximation of the square root of 8.
Yeah.
And the core line.
Nice. Okay.
I know many more things about progressions.
Yeah, that is the last fact I'm willing to hear about arithmetic.
Well, I've got progression of squares, they're pretty cool.
Okay.
125 and 49.
49. Next time. Okay. Right, my next thing. Have you heard about muddy children? I'm here to tell you the good news.
I'm sure you mentioned this to me once before because you told me never to Google muddy children because I might get into trouble.
I probably did that. Okay. The Muddy Children puzzle is, you've got three kids.
Who's Jesse Hughes?
Who's what?
Jesse Hughes?
It's the person who's written these slides about the Muddy Children problem.
Is it a boy or a girl?
It hasn't got an I in it, so Jesse could be a boy. Okay, does that answer your questions about the first slide? Okay, we're going to move on to the one with the puzzle in. Right, we've got three kids.
They do not look happy.
They don't, because they don't know whether they've got mud on them yet.
Who's Baba?
Baba. I think it's maybe another child or a baby. That's not important. Anyway, we've got three kids. They may or may not have mud on their faces.
Okay.
They can each see each other,
uh-huh,
but they can't see their own faces.
Oh, isn't this just like men with blue and red hats or men with eyes?
Yes, but we're going to formalise this with children. Formal children.
This is wrong. I prefer hats.
Okay. So Baba, who is not involved in the mud scenario, says at least one of you is muddy because they've seen what's going on, and rather than just tell everyone how muddy they are, they're being a bit obtuse. So Baba says at least one of you is muddy, and then asks them all, "Are you muddy?"
Right.
And they all say, "I don't know." Either one after the other, or all at the same time. Okay.
Yes.
So now they all know that one of them's muddy and that none of them have enough information to work out.
So that means none of them can see two non-muddy children.
Correct. Because then they'd be able to work out that they're the muddy one. Okay. So what Baba has done is make a public announcement. Mm-hmm. And what this puzzle is studying is, what you use to study this puzzle is public announcement logic, which I think is pretty interesting.
Pal,
yeah, my old pal. So by some deduction, they all work out eventually by repeated sayings of "I don't know" or "Yes, I am." Who's got mud on them? It's quite interesting. So there are some things you can do in public announcement logic that you can't do in normal logic, where there's just one of you and you're given a statement. And there's a whole load of extra operators. There's some modal operators.
The eventual operator.
The eventual operator. I think that means... I don't know. Okay, we use modal operators to express lots of concepts.
Oh, I like that. I think something is true.
Yeah, so it's...
Symbolize our two questions. Yeah. I've tried to do something for conjectures. But you take an equal sign, you put a question mark through it. So it's a bit like it does not equal, but it doesn't catch on.
Okay.
Especially supervisors don't like it.
Can you put that through any symbol, like an implication sign?
Yeah, it might be true.
Yeah. Divides question mark?
Yes.
I believe that's the basis of cryptography.
Cryptkey.
Yeah, so the kind of statements that you make while deducing things in public announcement logic involve what you know and what you think can be true, or if you were told something, what would be true after that. All that kind of stuff.
Wow. What's that?
There's a nice graph where...
Is that planets?
Oh, I don't know what... Yes, they look like planets. Let W be a set of worlds with a graph.
Possible world semantics.
Okay, so a world is a situation you're in, so like...
That looks like a category.
Assigning mud to each child. Okay. And different announcements, or in the logic, in the symbolism, these symbols let you move between different worlds. That tells you where you are. So there's a whole lot of slides.
If one of the children is blind and we don't know which one, can we still do...
Wow.
Problems. If we know probably. One of them is blind, but we don't know which one, that's can we good. Then do the logic still?
That would be good. We might be able to make a puzzle out. As an epistemic operator.
Oh. Right, get rid of them all. Go back to red and black hats.
Right.
So the children wearing red and black hats.
Oh, is this going to involve my disability?
Yes.
Oh.
There's going to be some colourblind children, some blind children. No, red, black and blue hats, so they can't tell the difference between the red and black, but they can't tell the difference between black and blue and red.
You're making
and blue.
This complicated before you've even got the simple ones.
So three children,
yeah.
They've all got red, blue or black hats on.
Yeah.
I walk in and say, oh, one of you's got this colour hat, at least one of you. One of the child's blind, but the other children don't know which one. One of the children's colour blind, one of them's fine. Can they deduce what colour hats they're
wearing? Hang on a minute, fine. What? I'm fine. I'll take offence.
Fine, that
I don't know, can they? Can they work it out?
I don't know. Can we solve it?
No.
Let's do it at Mass Jam.
Darren Dash's book.
Anyway,
there are all sorts of operators and things, and it's quite interesting. Look, there's a cube.
Oh, we should make one of the children alive.
Yeah. So these kinds of... This logic deals with those kinds of problems where you talk to someone who always lies and someone who always... Yeah. Does
does it have the paradox in? There's those problems where you have some people lie, some people tell the truth, but you don't know who. There's one subset where you can make somebody not be able to answer. So it's like if I say I am lying, that's paradoxical. Because if I was lying, I was telling the truth, if I was telling the truth, I'm lying.
Yeah.
So if you ask, if you can force one of these people you're asking questions into a paradox, their head explodes.
Is that the only response?
So this can take, yeah. There's some problems where you've got three people, some always tell the truth, some people always lie, some people randomly do it, and you can solve it in two questions, or you can solve it in one question if you can add a paradox that makes the head blow.
And by elimination, you find the person who doesn't lie.
So does logic do this?
Maybe.
Does it have a paradoxical... Can you force paradoxes and then gain information? If a paradox is forced, information will be gained.
Wow.
If you force somebody into a paradox.
I don't know. Well, Jesse doesn't deal with this in his or her slides.
Is there a song about Jesse? Because my head wants to start singing.
Jesse. I don't know, it wasn't
Who's girl? Jesse's girl. Is it Jesse's girl? The song.
I don't know, you know a song Jessie's about Stacey's mum as well. You seem to know a lot of named songs.
Stacey's mum has got, I think it was Jesse's girl. Jesse's girl.
I've never heard of it before.
Jesse's girl.
Okay. So that was that.
But what sort of people listen to this? Actual mathematicians?
I hope so.
So there was a study done on how mathematicians eat corn on the cob.
Yes. Did I not show you this?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
But it's come to my head when you've shown me another stupid
okay.
test. So I eat corn on the cob by doing rings. So I will start at one end, twist it and do a ring, move along a bit, do it again and go right the way through.
Yeah.
Where you eat corn on the cob.
I eat it typewriter style. I start at one end, I go left to right, and then I turn it a bit.
This is, I'm an analyst, Christian's an algebraist, and apparently there's some statistical significant evidence, but I think they did it with like 20 people.
I think it was hands up at a conference.
And no, it wasn't hands up, it was at a conference dinner.
Okay.
Everyone was eating corn on the cob, and someone looked around and went, hang on, all the analysis eat in rings, and all of the algebraists, apart from one, was eating in lines. But the one who, the person who said he was an algebraist, who was eating it incorrectly, was actually a number theory guy.
That's not really algebra.
You don't know where you really put that.
I'm amazed he even ate the corn at all.
He just proved that he could at it and left the room.
Yeah. Meanwhile, there's a category theorist standing by the oven just cooking corn.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a cool fact. I put that as a question on the aperiodical survey a while ago. Should we have a look at how it's going? Because I think only one of the questions got spammed by porn people.
Stacey's mom. I'm allowed to sing songs, aren't I?
Okay, this... it's gone offline. We'll never know what the results of the survey were because it's disappeared. That's sad. Do you? Okay, you were going to talk about something.
Well, a stupid game that the Aperiodical told me to go play because it looked interesting.
Okay, the name is...
Was it Trouble?
Was that?
Was it? Was that? I don't know.
Was that? Oh, I was trying to joke and you didn't get it.
WZZI. It wasn't a good joke. WZZITTROUBLE.
Okay, was it Trouble?
Was it Trouble? Right, so there's a little man who's stuck. You've got a gear, you've got to solve him. It's not very good.
Is that all you want to say about it? It looks sort of interesting.
I've got a gear
that
goes from 0 to 60. Is that called a gear?
It goes from 0 to 65.
65,
David.
Yes. And that's actually quite a good thing, because 65 doesn't have many divisors.
Yeah.
So if it went to 60, then that has lots of divisors, and it'd just be even easier. And it's already a very stupidly easy game.
I think you might not be the target market.
I don't know, but I'm pretty sure a six-year-old could play with this for 5 minutes, figure out, ooh, there's a nice little trick. Oh no, every one of these 75 puzzles... You just look at this little trick and it's solved. I went through every one hoping it would get harder.
Okay, can I have a go at one?
Yeah, I'll put you on the hardest level.
The hardest level.
For the last one. I'd have left the hardest for last.
Okay. I've got these dots around the gear that I need to get to, I think.
So to complete the level, you need to get all the keys. So there's keys, that's 14, 28, 34 and 50. And you have lots of little gears, so you can move 14, 17, 18, and 19.
Okay.
And it's cyclo is modulo, so you'll be doing modulo 65.
Okay, so I'm going to turn... Do I have to physically turn this gear?
Yeah, and you can turn it up to 5 times.
How do I...
Like not, that. One. Oh. So you've got the first key.
I've got a key. Now, the next one is at 19.
Now, apparently, you do this in 9 moves or fewer, but to get... That's what the genius do. That's what the top-rating people would do.
Mm-hmm.
Is do it in 9 moves or fewer.
Okay.
But you can actually do most of them in 3 moves.
Right, I'm up to 2 moves so far. How am I doing? There are 4 keys to get, so I'm not sure I'm going to get it in.
You've got 2 left, and you've got 7 moves to do it. So you're 6 away.
Okay.
So...
What about this next one there, though? That's it.
The little trick is to get to the next one, you would go 17 back 3 times.
Yeah.
You can use one small gear up to 5 times.
Oh, that counts as one move.
And now I would use 19 3 times, because 19 minus 17 is 2, and therefore I'll go 6.
Okay.
And now I've got 1 left. I've got to get from 34 to 50, so that is 16. So now I just look at how I can make 16. And 9 moves are fewer. I've got 5 moves left.
Okay,
so,
I can do it.
I could do 14 out of 19 minus 17 is 16.
I can do it in 2, though.
How?
I can go... Is that backwards?
Yeah. How far back are you going?
4 of those.
Yes. And then 4... So, Christian just went back 14 4 times.
Oh, wait, why has he done that?
And he's accidentally gone back 17 once.
Oh, I'm going to have to go forward 17. Okay. I'm going to go forwards 18 4 times.
So that gives him the 16. I think he might have done it wrong, folks. No.
I did it right. You've got to have faith
in
me.
And there we go. So there's the hardest level in the game solved, and just with no thinking whatsoever.
Okay.
So actually, I'm being a bit too harsh. It is quite interesting. So the first 5 puzzles, I did have fun of it.
If you were a small child in more ways than you currently are, I think you might enjoy this.
Look, I just think it needs more things to it. It needs more depth.
Okay.
There was a brilliant Nintendo DS game called Make 10.
Make 10, okay.
So you would... Every game, there's about 10 different games. There probably was 10, actually.
That would make sense with the motif.
It was basically doing lots of maths modulo 10.
Okay.
And you would just have to make things add up to 10. So the first game, there'd be lots of cards, and you had to pick two cards that add up to 10, or maybe three, uh-huh. and they'd disappear, and more would come, and there'd be more and more different games yeah. making 10. And each one got different harder, each one had sub-games where it got more difficult. Make 10 was a very good mathy game. It had some stuff similar to this, but there was much more to it, much more involved, and you were learning more than one trick. And that's the problem here, there's one trick you learn that you're done.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice if this could have taught people, like obviously I saw this trick instantly, and anyone, a non-mathematician wouldn't see the trick instantly, but after a bit of play they would.
I think that's basically the only trick there could be to this game.
Yeah, but no, I'm sure you could put more things in.
Well, my first thought as a group theorist is that I'm annoyed we're playing on the cyclic group.
Yes.
Can we get some D's in? Maybe a game where you got to turn a cube around.
Well, actually, I'm a non-commutative geometrist, so I want non-commutative gears.
Okay.
I don't know how that would work.
I don't know. Maybe they could paint the gears as they're going around or something.
Yeah, so this is one of the super hard levels.
Okay, is this easier or harder than the one
this is level 22 out of the... So this is level 77 out of 75. Mm-hmm. So you'd expect something hard. This has only got one key. It's at number 11. And we have gears 3, 12, 14 and 15. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really hard, I guess, since it's near the end. But all you do is 14 forward, 30 back.
I don't understand why that would be hard.
I don't get it.
Are we missing something?
I don't know. I don't know why it's on so near the end. Because it's so easy, isn't it? Do you get that?
I don't get that at all. Maybe when they designed it, they didn't want you to go backwards. And then they've added in backwards and it makes everything easy.
Maybe. Anyway, it's a nice game, but it's boring if you know how numbers work.
Okay, but if you've got a tiny child learning how to use numbers.
Yeah, actually, if you've got a six-year-old, then it's a great way to encourage them to understand how adding numbers works.
Okay.
But if you're studying for a PhD in mathematics, then you're probably going to be angry and bored as me.
Just in general, but also because of this game.
Yeah, so it's a very good game for people who, as an intro to, I don't know, I feel as though you're tricking people to do maths.
Oh no. Not the maths trickster.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, okay,
good.
I like the idea behind it. I just didn't enjoy it myself. But okay. Good thinking. Can I put Jesse's mum on now? Jesse's girl.
You can't.
Anyway, I've got a question for you.
Okay.
So, you have a computer, and you know how they work.
Yeah, that's true.
And you've done maths on them.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about the four-colour theorem.
Uh-oh.
The only proof for that is by a computer did most of the work.
Yeah.
So I checked thousands of cases, and people don't really like that.
Yeah.
But what I was thinking about is, what's the future of using computers for maths going to be? Is it just going to be checking cases or running simulations, or is there going to be any way we can prove things more?
Well, interesting you should mention that, and interesting you should forget the thing that you read a couple of months ago.
What thing?
There are some people that have written a book called Homotopy Type Theory.
I'll glance at that article.
Okay. It's meant to be a new foundation for mathematics, because sets turned out not to work, and all sorts of things turned out not to work.
Does that mean just maths doesn't work? Or that you can't formalise mathematics?
Well, depending how far you want to go, that's true, but this one resolves a lot of the problems. So the idea with homotopy type theory is you don't start with sets, you start with homotopies.
Right.
Which I would say is a more complicated thing, but apparently not. Anyway, what they've done is the whole system is very easily entered into a propositional calculus proof assistant thing. Right, so homotopy...
another one.
This is the bit of metal that we heard at the start of the podcast. You brought that down with you.
Okay.
if you look, homotopy type theory, David.
Yes. 7.
The whole foundation, you can state it in terms that proof assistants can understand. So the entire thing has been verified and checked by computer proof assistants. And the idea is that you'll be able to just sort of say what you want to be true and sort of check it, sort of.
Oh, so you can give it a theorem and it'll check it.
Yeah. But the amount of time it'll take to do that might be very long. So it's not going to check the ABC.
Could it prove something in finite time?
No. Because the Holton problem.
What's the Holton problem?
The Holton problem is, if I give you a computer program and ask you to tell me whether it's going to finish or not.
Oh no, but will it will finish at some point though, won't it?
Or it might not. What if it's a program that doesn't finish? How do you decide? It looks like it's made you very sad.
It does. It's making me think of geometric group theory.
Okay.
Because you can use Tietze's transformations. So if two groups are the same, then you can use a finite number of Tietze transformations to get from one to the other. So yeah. You can make a computer do this. But if it's taken 213 years, that doesn't necessarily mean they're not equivalent. It just means it might not have found how to turn them into each other yet.
Yeah.
Is that the Holton problem?
That's another Holton problem. It's another undecidable problem. This is what my whole PhD thing was on, so it's good that you're showing an interest.
It's a good question.
You show more interest than I do, because I gave up.
Anyway, I'm what a McDonald's, so you've got a question
for
me. I think we should BBC it.
BBC it?
Yeah, I've just mentioned McDonald's, so we could also go to Burger King, couldn't we?
Oh, yes, KFC. Because other fast food outlets are...
And we could not just take inspiration from the BBC, we could take inspiration from ITV. A Channel 4.
What, and take money in return for only mentioning one of them?
Maybe. Anyway, your question.
Well, my question was quite long-winded. I just wanted you to explain to me the invariant special subset.
I knew that was going to be it. So the invariant... Right, there's a thing...
First, we need to start a Banach algebra. Because
we can start at a Hilbert space.
A Hilbert space, okay.
So a Hilbert space is a thing.
Right.
First of all, you need to know what a vector space is.
I'm happy with a vector space. Anyone else listening can go and look it up.
Okay.
I don't care about them.
And we add a structure onto this vector space.
Yeah.
Now, it's a structure a bit like multiplication. We're going to put two elements and we're going to get something new. What we're going to get is a complex number. This is called an inner product. So what this... sesquilinear map, I believe. I don't know. I'll explain it in a minute.
Sesquilinear.
Yeah, so it takes two elements,
yeah.
It hits them together, and we get a complex number.
Right.
But it needs some certain properties.
Okay.
So you do it in a triangular bracket.
Triangular bracket.
That thing. What do you call them?
L angle and R angle.
Yeah, Langles and Rangles. So it has to be linear in the first term.
Yeah.
Conjugate linear in the second.
Okay.
Should we end that?
Oh no, it started again. Right, we've lost some amount of stuff, and it's almost McDonald's time, so we might just have to lose my question. It was going to take a while, wasn't
anyway,
it?
Anyway, vector space with an inner product, a bit like Doppler's Hilbert space. It's going to have holes in it, so fill them up.
Yeah.
And then we've got a Hilbert space. For each, I'm going to be thinking about complex Hilbert spaces, so my vector space, my scalar multiplication is going to be the complex number. For every cardinality, there exists a Hilbert space, one Hilbert space, all the others are isomorphic to it. So for dimension one, we've got the complex numbers. There's only one inner product you can put on that turns it into a Hilbert space. And they'll be together.
Okay.
And then you get C squared, da, 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 da.
Right.
And then when you get to infinite dimension, you get something called L2.
Okay.
Little
L2 is functions on infinitely many variables or something. Or
yeah.
Is that L infinite?
So you've got infinitely many, a vector that's infinitely long.
Yeah.
We're going to put complex numbers in them all. But the only ones we care about is if you take the magnitude of them all,
yeah.
Square it, and add them all up, you would get. Less than infinity. So the sequence 1, a half, a third, a quarter, a fifth, a sixth belongs into it. Because if
yeah.
you square all of that, you get the sum of the reciprocals of the squares, which is pi squared by 6.
This is the thing, I can't do your kind of thing, because you're talking about just adding up infinities and doing all sorts of mad stuff. The only problem I have is that I can state problems that cannot be decided by anybody. And I'm happy with that as a philosophical thing, that there are unsolvable problems. But you've got problems that look like they shouldn't be solved.
Anyway, now we've got this Hilbert space. We're just going to deal with L2, none of the others.
Yeah.
Because invariant subspace problems close for the other spaces.
Yeah.
So we've got this space of square seminal infinitely long sequences.
Yeah.
And now we think, let's take an operator. Now, this operator goes from my Hilbert space, my L2, to itself.
Right.
It has to be, by an operator, I mean a map which is linear and bounded.
Okay.
And Hilbert space is, bounded is equivalent to continuous.
Okay.
So I've got this map doing this, nice and linear, nice and continuous.
Yeah.
The invariant subspace problem says that there must be a subspace of L2, say X, such that T maps all of X inside of X. That's the invariant subspace problem.
Okay.
And it's been proved for the bigger Hilbert spaces and the smaller one. The only one that's left is an infinitely long separable Hilbert space. Infinitely big, whatever. I don't know. I'm getting very hungry now. I don't even know how maths works. Anyway, do you want to tell New Scientist describe it?
Yes, please.
It's whether or not you can balance a spin an infinite dimensional basketball on your finger.
I don't think I can do it. Can you?
I don't think so, but that's how New Scientist reported one of the biggest news stories in mathematics. Yes, it wasn't true. Well, the proof that did have holes on it, but New Scientist decided to report that by saying it's like playing with an infinite dimensional basketball.
Well, you've got to make it easily relatable to something someone does in their everyday life.
Yes, of course.
Oh, well.
Yes. I think the hole in the proof involved that they couldn't find an infinite dimensional basketball.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Yeah, they had it all lined up with Michael Jordan. Right.
Michael Jordan!
Right, we should end there. Thank you very much for doing this, David.
Thank you a lot, CP.
Okay, we may do another one of these in the future.
We may not. We may review sequences again, but probably not.
We may not.
Or we may review constants or bananas.
Banana reviews.
Yes.
Okay.
By the way, what would you define a unit banana to be?
A unit banana?
So how would you? You'd probably have to. What curvature would you give a banana if you were drawing a unit banana? And once you've defined it, how many do you think you can fit into a circle?
Is there such a thing as a circular banana?
Oh, like, by the way, I'm considering a banana to be two-dimensional.
Two-dimensional banana. Okay.
Can you just do the intersection of two ellipses?
I don't know.
Would that make a circular banana?
I just don't know.
Is this a banana?
I don't think this question's well defined. That's not a banana you've drawn. It looks like a kidney.
Is that a banana?
It could be if it was yellow.
I don't have a yellow pen.
Okay, it's not a banana.
Piece of metal.
Right, we'll stop there.
Yeah. Bye! You remember the song like the two bodies?
What song would you like to sing?
I don't know, so I haven't got any mathematical.
No, okay. I can't sing either. Can you sing?
Not really.
Okay, let's not end on the song.
Fine.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye.
And close the brackets.